I'd like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council Study Session for Thursday, June 4th, 2009. We'd like to excuse Vice Mayor Jones and Councilmember Summers, who are both traveling this morning on city business and will not be calling in. First item on our agenda this morning is to hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on a proposed ordinance on individual residential rental inspections. Ms. Albright.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Council members. I'm Tammy Albright. I'm Deputy Director in the Development and Sustainability Department. It's a tough one to say. We're going to talk about the Individual Residential Inspection Program. Just to give you a little history, in November of last year, the voters approved Proposition 400 by 79%. What that was is was an amendment to change our charter to allow us to adopt a residential rental inspection program. There are two types of programs at the state level that we could adopt. One is a citywide and one is an individual. The citywide was you register with the county, and then it allows the city to do random inspections. That is not the type that the council chose to put on the ballot. We put the individual, which is a request base. The tenant or the owner has to invite us in. I gotta change this. Which button do I hit? The space bar? Okay, sorry.
Either that or up and down.
Okay, okay. This program will apply to all residential rental properties. Let me go to this next one. Okay, the state law outlines six conditions under which the city would be permitted to enter a property and do an interior inspections. I've kind of outlined those on this slide. Keep in mind that any of these six criteria would still require consent from the owner or the tenant to let us enter. However, all of these are tools in our toolbox, which would allow us to be proactive, especially when we're working with, we have an action team where we can go into a neighborhood and we try to work with the owners of that neighborhood to clean it all up. These are tools in our toolbox that will allow us to do that, to be proactive. I'd like to draw your attention to the first one, which talks about materially affects the health and safety. The state law also outlines 13 conditions that qualify as materially affecting the health and safety of the occupants. I just outlined a few of the ideas behind those 13 conditions. And they would be things like bad wiring, structural hazards, exiting issues. But they are attached in your packet as Exhibit A. We presented this proposal to the Housing Board in February. And they had some concerns, well, we had some concerns about what do we do with the occupants if we feel that the conditions are bad enough, they have to be removed, or we have to ask them to find other housing for the time being. The Housing Board was pretty adamant that they did not feel the city should provide temporary housing. They felt that we should provide a packet that would outline the resources available, community churches, social service agencies, where the occupants could find that service. We also talked about, as part of the consent, it'd be a written consent to enter, and part of that consent would outline that should we feel the hazards are bad enough that they do have to vacate, that finding temporary housing is their responsibility. That being said, the Neighborhood Services gave us $1,500 in emergency shelter grant funds that we can put aside that we could use on the very rare occasion that we actually had to put somebody, give somebody a hotel voucher for a night or two. We are still exploring partnering with the social service agencies on how we may take that $1,500 and pass that through and let a social service agency partner with one of them that would provide that temporary housing.
Yeah, I mean, Councilmember Higgins has a question.
I have a quick, when we discussed this in the Neighborhood Services Subcommittee, we talked about the possibility of having the owner of the apartment or rental actually be responsible for housing the individual if the condition is so bad that they can't actually live in the apartment. What happened there?
That's the next slide.
Tammy, can I ask a question? I'm trying to envision this scenario under which you are aware of a condition, you get a consent from the tenant or the landlord, and it's so bad that it requires immediate removal. I mean, wouldn't, if we have a condition that is either from a building standpoint or from a health and safety standpoint, and it's so bad that it rises to the level of immediate action, I mean, doesn't this almost go beyond the scope of what we can do? Aren't we into a building safety, a structural safety, or a public health type issue that goes far beyond, or not maybe far beyond, but crosses the line?
Yes.
So aren't we dealing primarily in the scenarios that we're going to do these home inspections? And aren't we dealing with this situation that we see something that's bad, but maybe it's sort of like, okay, we have to fix it, or you have a certain amount of time to move out? I mean, we're talking about the extreme case.
Absolutely.
And at that point in time, it seems to me like we'd be out of the realm of this inspection code and would be into a much more serious type of situation where these issues would almost be secondary.
Yeah, it seems like we're spending a lot of time on something that's going to be so very rare.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Most of the things we're talking about are issues that probably just need to be repaired, brought up to code, that are within the house. So I don't know that we need to spend a lot of time on this issue because it's just, I'm not sure.
If a house is falling down, if a house is structurally deficient, I mean, you know, forget about the building code. We have a much larger problem at that point.
Well, let's remember, we have families, individuals that are displaced often through just fires.
Right.
And we find ways to deal with that. So I'm not concerned that that's going to be, one, I think it's going to be a rare extreme issue where we're being brought in on that case. I think really we need to focus on dealing with the majority of the time, the day-to-day, the more routine.
Well, there are serious violations that require action, but they don't rise to the level of immediate action.
Yeah, we need to get on them now so we don't end up in that rare situation.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, in most cases we can isolate them, the hazard, and keep the people there. Last month in April, April, we presented this proposal to the Community and Neighborhood Services Committee. And I've outlined on this slide their questions. They wanted to find out how we could make the landlord pay for temporary housing. There are no specific provisions that would allow us to do this, and we feel this would be really problematic in that it would be making the city require one person pay a bill to another person. It'd be really, really tough to enforce. Plus, we felt that the Landlord-Tenant Act has several provisions in it that outline legal processes and procedures that for the tenant to pursue recouping their costs for several different scenarios. They also asked about if the city provided the temporary housing, is there a mechanism to recoup the cost? At this point, we believe we would be able to file liens against the property, but we'd have to do some additional legal research to confirm all that. Are the tenants protected from retaliation was another concern. The Landlord-Tenant Act outlines all the conditions and processes that a person could pursue that if they felt they were being retaliated against. So we don't feel that our ordinance would have to step into that arena as well. And then someone asked about the cost of providing this inspection at the city level versus the private industry. We did do some benchmarking. In the industry, they charge per square footage for about 1,000 square feet or less. It takes an average of about 2 hours to perform an inspection, and it's around $250 and up. It costs about $90 an hour to pay for an inspector. That is benefits, equipment, trucks, computers, maintenance. At 2 hours would be about $180. So we do feel that we're saving money by doing this in-house.
Councilman Richards.
I'm sorry, I just can't let that stand because the first year is going to be telltale. We're going to see how many inspections we have to do every year. If you're not doing enough inspections to have a person do it, and we'll just, I know we're not hiring somebody full time, and we're using existing resources, I understand that. But as things move forward, if we're only doing one or two inspections a week, you know, it wouldn't ever make sense to have a city employee doing it. It would always make more sense to outsource it, unless, you know, we can totally squeeze it in with their duties. I just don't want the perception of well, we're doing it for $180 an hour, and the private industry does it for $250 an hour. If we don't have enough work to keep that $180 an hour employee busy full time, then it's costing us money. It's not. So it's just the way that you frame that just came across as not correct. But
okay. Therefore, the committee and the staff are recommending an individual residential inspection program that duplicates the city or duplicates the state, be primarily based, request based, but it does allow us to have a tools in our toolbox to be proactive, and that we get written consent. We are also saying that we can we would start this program using existing staff and monitor it. Mostly it would be our building inspectors who are certified building inspectors. Some of our code officers are looking into becoming HQS certified, which is Housing Quality Standard certified. Then they would also be able to perform these inspections. Do want to note that this does affect our prioritization list on our and our complaints. Right now, this would move to the top because we would consider this a like life safety issue, and that could affect how quickly we get to other complaints. We're looking at a public outreach. We would partner with neighborhood services to get the notices out to the registered neighborhoods. We'd work with social service agencies, put it on the website, look at some other media to get the word out that we are adopting a program of this nature. Do you guys have any questions?
Councilmember Finter.
Thanks. I have lots of questions. I'm trying to make sure I get those streamlined. Appreciate the presentation. You made a couple comments. Appreciate the action team. Had a chance to work with them, see how they've made a great difference. When you talk about the election and the 79%, you know, asking for something to be done, what I took away and what I hear from a lot of constituents is very frustrated and tired about the deteriorating condition of a lot of the housing stock in Mesa. And I appreciated the mayor's comments as to how he's framed. This is a tool in the probably some of the most extreme cases. I wouldn't say that 79% of the people wanted interior inspections. I think 79% of the people that voted wanted something done with resources, whatever efforts we can, to address the deterioration that's going on in Mesa. But my biggest concerns, I've had a chance to really study through this. This is a big deal for me. We were asked quite a bit about it as we were elected and gone through the process. But concerned about the administrative decision-making process of when we decide to utilize this tool. When you give government the power, and this is going to sound a little libertarian, but the power to go into private property and access people's living areas, you know, that's a big deal. A lot of power that you want to be careful who you give that to. So what I'm hope to advocate is for a check and balance in the decision-making process administratively, where at some higher level, either an assistant city manager or deputy city manager, that a checkoff process is in place, much like and where we've referenced here in this packet, the warrant system. You know, the judiciary, they have a judge that checks off and keeps, makes sure there's balance in the law enforcement area. I think it's really important we do that at a city level, at least for the first year to see. If I had my rathers, it would be our city manager that would check off before we use this rarely used tool in the most extreme circumstances. Also in the report, you know, it talks about using existing staff and personnel, and I think you've heard from some of the council members, we realize these are very difficult times, but I think what I took away from the election is people want more efforts, more resources, and hopefully someday we'll be able to get to that point. When you talk about prioritizing these inspections, it's going to definitely rob Peter to pay Paul, and so I'm concerned about that. But I know staff's well aware of that. We've had an opportunity to meet. So those are a little bit of my my concerns and questions. I would hope, do we have an administrative, like an algorithm or something as how this will be done? And with that question, my big concern is, yes, we need written consent, but can a inspector on his own stop by and say, hey, occupant, I think this is a rental project, or, you know, they're very obvious out there. Why don't you sign off on this form? I'd like to come in and inspect. And I think there needs to be a lot more administrative oversight I spent years as an arson investigator and inspector. I supervised that same group for years as a captain. We definitely need check and balance in the system so we don't have abuses. So thanks for letting me go on, man.
Well, if I could follow up just a bit on that. I mean, put it in another area, and I know there's a concern in this. Let's say we have a police officer. We have two situations. Police officer comes up and say, may I search your car? If you give them consent, you give them consent. If you say no, police officer has the option then to either search the car and do something that's blatantly illegal or stop and say, I'm going to go to a judge. I'm going to go through the process that we're talking about here. And I'm going to get a search warrant. I have probable cause. I'm going to get a judge to sign off on that. Two completely different scenarios. In this one, since it's primarily consent driven, where would we fall into a place where we would have the kind of scenario that I think Councilmember Finter legitimately brings up, where there's an abuse unless we go into an apartment without consent?
Mayor, I think I want to make sure I understand this, but I think Councilmember Finter's concern is we go in and say, hey, can we would like to come inspect your property. Would you give us a permission to do so? And if they do, then yes, arguably we have the written consent similar to the police officer who says, can I search your vehicle? And the owner of the vehicle says, yes, you can. So we engage in the search. So I think legally we would be permitted at that point to enter the facility.
Even legally, even procedurally. I mean, if somebody says, yes, you may enter, yes, you may look at it, yes, you may do that. And let's assume that, once again, a police officer receives a lot of training to be able to handle that situation. And I guess maybe the concern is that we don't have that training and we may stumble into something. But isn't the form that we have, the written consent, won't outline the rights of the individual?
Yes, it
basically
will.
Basically, okay.
And we have not drafted that yet. But yes, that's right. Our expectation. And I believe, Councilmember Finter, we have not drafted the administrative procedures that will be followed. But the intent is that this is going to be basically a request or a complaint-driven process. So that it is not our expectation that the building inspectors will be out there knocking on doors saying, you know, we would like to inspect your property. Now, that's not to say if they're already out there for some purpose and they see something that concerns them, they may raise an issue. But
yeah, that's
we haven't worked through all of those details.
That's going to be an issue. If they drive by and they see something, they may pursue that. And I would agree with Councilman Fincher. As we're drafting those procedures, we need to have it very well established as to what that means to get consent and what steps they can take to initiate that process. Councilmember Higgins.
Will we be revisiting this in like 3 to 6 months to see how it's going? My concern is we have not done this yet. So we honestly don't know the condition of some of the rental properties, and it's possible there's more out there that aren't livable than we might think there are. And then that issue of finding these people, you know, paying for where they're going to stay, or that's a big concern because we honestly don't know. We haven't done this before. And with some of the pictures that you have shown in your presentation, you know, there's nowhere in an apartment those people could possibly live that we could, like, work on one, not we, someone could work on one side of the house while they live somewhere else. So until we really, you know, have a few months under our belt, I don't know if we can say it's a minor. And I hope it is a minor issue that, you know, most things are minor and can be fixed. But in that case, so that's my question. Are we going to revisit to decide whether this program, how we have it planned, where we're not going to end up charging back the owner of the property why we displace their renters? That's my question. That no is a big statement, actually.
Well, I guess that also begs the question, if we have a landlord that is keeping their property in such a condition that it does not meet basic health and safety, is it government's responsibility to basically subsidize that slumlord tenant by, I mean, it begs the other question, so whose responsibility is it? I think we're assuming it's the landlord, the building owner's responsibility to maintain a residence, a habitation that meets basic health and safety standards. And that's, you know, frankly, that's a pretty low standard.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about it, it's a fairly low standard. Whose responsibility is it? I believe it's the building owners, the landlords.
Can I just back
right
up? That's my concern because back on page 5 of the presentation, talk about the neighborhood services allotting a possibility of an emergency fund to relocate somebody, emergency shelter. This isn't the same thing as your house. being inhabitable because of fire or natural disaster. This is a landlord's reason. So I don't see how we should take any kind of emergency shelter funds from the government.
So the question
to help
you're
them.
Asking is, why is it even an issue? Why is,
yeah.
it, not, why is it on the table?
Well, no. Why isn't it just automatically assumed it's the owner of the property's responsibility?
Right. Why is the fact that we would even step in and pay for that? Why
right.
is that an issue? Ms. Spinner.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, I think the purpose of the allotment, and Tammy, correct me if I'm wrong, is this: if this happens, it will truly be an emergency, and there could be, it will take time to work that out legally with the property owner that you have this responsibility to reimburse. So we are not saying that we won't attempt to collect from the property owner, but this will be an emergency situation, and these funds have been set aside so that that emergency can be taken care of, and then we will resolve it with the property owner.
Okay. One more thing, because along these lines, we say there's legal follow-up for these renters. If a renter's living in this type of home or apartment or whatever, chances are they're not on, you know, they don't have that the money in the first place to go and get legal means or understand how that whole thing works. And you know, these are already people being, I think, taken advantage of if they're living in a truly slum. So to assume that they're going to go and be able to recoup money from a landlord legally is just...
Well, if the city uses its funds, these $1,500, to deal with that emergency situation, we would probably be the ones to initiate the contact with the property owner and seek reimbursement for those funds.
Council members has... Or Riggins.
Riggins.
Riggins. It took me a little while to mess up a name.
Richens and Higgins, I guess.
Councilmember David Richens.
Thank you, Mayor Scott Smith.
Yes, thank you.
I think a couple things to remember is a lot of the tenants have protections under state law under the Landlord-Tenant Act, and we forget that. But you need to. There's another law in place that the state legislature has addressed some of the concerns that you're talking about, Councilmember Finter. And if I could refer you to the bottom of page 2 of the staff report under the discussion item there, it's Arizona Revised Statute 9-1302, and it lines out 6 conditions that these inspections can take place under. And so the state legislature has addressed that. I think the issue that Councilmember Finter brought up, his second point to that I thought was very important was kind of a check in the system. What if our inspector comes in and says one thing and the landlord disputes it? No, I don't think that is. But I think the fallback position on that is we have a building code that's pretty black and white about, you know, it's something safe or it's not. And I think that building code is pretty well defined too. I think the law keeps an inspector hemmed in pretty well, and it makes it very difficult for them to go off and make judgments trying to apply the law unequally to one group or another. So I feel really comfortable with the direction. I think it was very well discussed at our housing advisory board. I appreciated reading the minutes of that meeting, and our community services committee really had an opportunity to vet some questions, and I had the same concerns you did about temporary housing and who should pay for that, because I don't want to create a situation where a landlord lets his property go so far down that somebody gets displaced and then government's on the hook. But I agree. I think the mayor and our city manager have both indicated that it's going to be a pretty rare situation. And I think that's true after looking at it and reevaluating. I don't think that's going to happen very often, but we'll see. You know, I think evaluating this after a year is really going to be important. But our Mesa voters, I know in my district, overwhelmingly supported this. They've been wanting to do something about slum property. And so I think we really need to keep our eye on the prize here, which is really, There's a small percentage of property that is causing a high percentage of the code problems in our city. And finally, we have the tool in our toolbox to do something about it. And so I believe our staff is trying to structure a program to do something about it. And so I'm willing right now, let's let them move forward on this program, get it in place. We can evaluate it in 6 months or a year, whichever works. I have high confidence in our staff executing this, and then having good statistics for every inspection to provide a framework of evaluation. after whatever period we decide to set to review this program. But I really appreciated this, you know, the Landlord-Tenant Act and the state statutes that have framed this in a way that it doesn't really allow for out-of-control inspectors to be able to go in willy-nilly and do whatever they want. Thank you.
Thanks, Councilmember Richens. Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments. I am actually very supportive of this. I got the message when the voters voted for it. I definitely still would suggest that administratively we have a check and balance built in. Long years of experience has taught me that if there's a way to intimidate or kind of work with outside some of the guidelines, sometimes that happens. And sometimes it's emotion. We have a fine staff, dedicated employees. What I'm trying to do is advocate building into the system for long-term, years down the road, that there isn't an opportunity for a rogue inspector or a system maybe missing a piece that someone is able to. I'll give you the classic scenario is someone goes by and they see a difficult a fourplex that has a long history of trouble in a neighborhood. If it's as simple as, hey, I carry a form, I knock on the door, there's mom and four kids, a little overwhelmed about the situation, I'm a city inspector, I need to look inside here, you need to sign the form. Things like that have happened in the past under certain, difficult circumstances. And then later people go, well, we've been given the trust of the community to be able to draft something. I think it's very prudent to build in a check and balance in that system so we can maintain that trust in the long run, be able to have it done right and properly so no one's private property rights are violated. So thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. As we develop these specific standards, I think you've got the sense here. It's obvious that the citizens of Mesa want us as a city to enforce basic standards that come with health and safety and come especially as buildings, as Councilman Richards said, are getting older. On the other hand, they want us to be very, very careful about how we do that and recognize the existing rights. So as you draft those, I'm confident that you'll come up with something.
Is the consensus of the council you would require or ask us to put in the procedure requirement that the inspector cannot enter in the home with consent unless that consent has been reviewed and approved by someone other than the actual inspector? I mean, because that's, and I appreciate that they're trying to create the balance here, but on one hand, I hear
let's look at what Councilmember Fender mm-hmm. talked about. I would feel more comfortable in the beginning, for example, we're talking about situations that everyone is aware of. We know that this fourplex has been dilapidated. We know that there's a property down the street that may have a problem. I think that the necessity for a drive-by inspection is probably pretty lean. I would feel comfortable, and I don't know if others concur, if somebody sees something, if an inspector is out there and they see a property, that it's probably not going to be a surprise. It's going to be something people know about and have known about. It would be nice if there was at least two people involved in the discussion as to whether they're going to ask for consent or not. Whether that's a discussion before they go out that day or whether they wait a day and say, hey, listen, I have this property here. They talk about it with someone, at least a supervisor or somebody just at least checks out, says, I understand you're going to that property and you're going to ask for consent. I think that the potential for just a drive-by inspection, first of all, I'm trying to think of the scenario where that really will happen on an ongoing basis. I don't imagine that will happen because I think most of our problems are pretty well known and they will be known. And if there's an emergency situation, then maybe that's different. But I think in most cases, we might feel more comfortable if at least somebody else was involved in the process or the decision to walk up and get consent.
Okay. So that's a real fundamental question about how councils, both in the past and currently, have imagined how this program is going to be executed. On one level, I think there's an expectation that we will put out information, phone numbers or whatever, and educate people that if they have a concern, whether the property owner or tenant, and they want to call us and ask us for an inspection, then we would do it. The next question becomes, is there an expectation, whether it's through the action team or other routine duties of co-compliance that we may be doing on the exterior, that we may draw our attention that there may be something on the interior that's problematic, but we can't do anything today. The question is, do we go to that next step beyond kind of passive wait for someone to come, you know, approach us and ask us to come investigate versus now a little different posture where we initiate the contact and ask and seek consent. So seeking consent versus consent coming to us are two very different approaches to the administration of this program.
Mayor.
Well, I think, yeah, if I might again refer to that, this page 2 of the staff report, I mean, it lays out pretty clearly the conditions in which you can perform an inspection. And I'm going to go ahead and read them since, you know, conditions that materially affect the health and safety of the occupants. That's defined in an Arizona revised statute as what those health and safety issues are. A significant history of crime at the property. So there's a history there. This isn't like going to get a warrant to search for drugs where the drugs can get moved. It's not like we're going to go out and get a warrant to inspect a property and then they're going to come in and fix the plumbing real quick overnight, you know, to make sure that everything's, I mean, it's not things, conditions are going to be conditions. And so we have time. We don't have to be in a breathless rush to get in and do an inspection. Documented history of building code violations. Owner repeatedly fails to comply with the building code, which are just very basic things. There is probable cause that the property is not in compliance with the building code. That's the one that's kind of shaky. That's the one that, okay, what is that probable cause? That's the one I think that we need to be patient. And having, I think, as Councilmember Fincher suggests, we probably should have another layer of somebody that signs off on that. Because the next one defines who can initiate a complaint. An owner, a property manager, or a lawful tenant. One of those three. It doesn't list city building inspector on that list. But number 5 addresses city building inspector. Probable cause that the building is, the property is not in compliance. So I think time is on our side in inspecting these. So to have somebody, whether it be a city attorney that reviews really quickly that, yeah, this is a property that has the documented history that meets the test of that's outlined in the Arizona revised statutes, I think that's a good thing because it protects tenants, it protects owners, it protects the public.
Councilmember Higgins?
I have a question because what I don't, so you're saying if I'm asking the city to come and inspect, it's different. I'm assuming there's two things we're talking about here. One is through the tenant requests the city to come and inspect and they're going to get an inspection. It's not an oversight issue. And the other issue is the inspector comes by and sees loose wiring hanging from the ceiling while he's responding to wild dogs in the backyard. That's a situation that needs secondary oversight. But the first one, if I'm a tenant, I'm calling, I'm going to get someone to respond.
Tenant, property manager, owner.
All
state
three
law all says those okay. Three can initiate an interior inspection.
So the question is, are we asking that those three people still need oversight from the city?
No, they're fine. Those three can still initiate it.
Great.
It's the outside of those three, when a city inspector has these other points that say a documented history of crime, building code violations, that we have probable cause. At that point, when you don't have a cooperative tenant, you don't have a cooperative owner, you don't have a cooperative property manager, that's when this gets really sketchy and uncomfortable, I think.
Well,
so that's why we need to have patient legal process.
We can't execute this inspection without any consent. So what I think I understood is, on the first scenario where we're being requested to come in, we haven't. They've called us.
Right.
That we're comfortable. We can go forward. It's the case where maybe through some other wild dogs in the backyard, whatever, we determine, hey, there may be some other issues here. But before we go and approach to seek consent, we need to have somebody else sign off on it. I think that's what I'm hearing, distinction.
Well, let's step back. Once again, this is a consent-driven program.
Yeah, completely on either
scenario.
Consent.
Regardless of the scenario, we have agreed we're not going to enter in without consent. This is not going to be a forced type of a thing.
Only exception is our court order, which would be very rare.
Let's not waste our time with that. We're talking about the extra extreme one. The normal, everyday type stuff, we're going to have a complaint or we're going to have a city-driven complaint, either one. Either it's a third party, not a third party, but a participating party, or it's city inspector. Before we go in, there's got to be consent involved. The question then would be, if it's not initiated by a owner, property manager, or lawful tenant, then the question is, who gives the authority for the inspector to walk up to the door, knock on it, and say, can I come in? Will you sign this consent?
Right.
Do we want an extra level of review or somebody to sit there and say, a supervisor, someone to say, yeah, this is bad enough. Let's go see if we can get in.
Yes.
Ms. Albright.
I would add to that is not only for the trust of the community, but the safety of the officers and the inspector.
Right.
They will never enter a place alone. It will always be a buddy system.
Well, but they're asking about getting consent about supervisors.
At least my consent.
Yeah. And when we say they'll never in, well, let's make sure that we have procedures that I think
absolutely.
What we're looking at is we want to make sure that that's not discretionary.
Yes, it is not. They have
we
to
want to protect both the officers and the city, and we want to protect the rights of individuals
absolutely.
Living in the property. So I think the answer is yes, yes.
Okay,
the
good.
Fact is, if you have a complaint from a tenant, owner, property manager, lawful tenant, and my guess is, if I'm a betting man, most of your requests are going to come from the tenants. I don't know how many owners are going to call and ask us to come and inspect their slum place. But if you have a tenant who calls, then we just need to make sure that it is the tenant before we show up. And even then, if they call, when we show up, we have to get their consent. The request is not consent, right?
Right, right.
The request is not consent. The request simply initiates the action to go to the door to say, can I come in now? And they're going to sign the consent at that time. Okay. Now, if that's not initiated by those three, then what we're saying here is that we would at least like somebody, two people to get together, one at a supervisory level or something, to say, hey, listen, yeah, you can go in and initiate that request for consent to enter. Is that what I'm hearing here?
Go to the consent.
To seek consent.
Not to go in. Seek okay. consent. Because at the end of the day, the consent is the ultimate door gatekeeper.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm seeing nods.
That's frame.
Yeah.
I'm seeing nods. Okay.
Good.
All right.
That's good. That helps.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Item number two, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on proposals related to combining this Downtown Development Committee and the Planning and Zoning Board, modifying the roles and responsibility of the Design Review Board, establishment of a Board of Architectural Review or Committee of Architectural Review Committee. I guess I should use the words on it, and then establishing a Development Advisory Board. Mr. Wesley and Ms. Zalanko.
Good morning. Good morning. Just a few quick introductory comments here. We have been asked to basically take a look at all of our processes. In particular, we're talking today about the interaction that we have with our various boards, and we were asked to come forward with some proposals on ideas on streamlining, improving efficiencies, at the same time making sure that we don't diminish our current, I think, very positive relationship with the development community and making sure that we maintain our public involvement aspect of the land development process. We've put together some proposals. We've sent them out to the Developers Advisory Forum. We actually met with the forum yesterday. So as we go through the presentation today, we're going to share with you some of the comments that came up yesterday. We basically have three proposals, and we thought if it's okay with you, we'll take each one individually and discuss it after each proposal. John's going to take the first two, and then I will take the last one.
Morning, Mayor and Council. The first item that we have for your consideration this morning is the P&Z Board and the Downtown Development Committee. Just real quickly, the Planning and Zoning Board looks at the entire city except for the downtown redevelopment area in terms of doing long-range planning, and that includes sub-area planning that they've done for special character areas of the city, and reviewing various applications for development, plats, rezones, council use permits, those types of things. P&Z Board in the process of doing this across the city. It looks at very large-scale projects, such as the DMB project, and very small-scale projects, individual lots of less than an acre in size that they sometimes get. They look at greenfield projects, new developing areas, and they look at small infill redevelopment projects. So they see quite the gamut of different types and scales of projects. They also see things that are single-use suburban-type projects that we see in a lot of the city, but have also gotten involved more recently in some very mixed-use urban-type things, particularly around the Fiesta Mall area. With some of the projects that have been going in there, and again the DMB proposal that had its urban core type development aspect to it. Downtown Development Committee was created several years ago when there was a need for giving the downtown area a little bit more special focus than maybe the Planning and Zoning Board could do because of some of the unique aspects of the downtown area. That committee has the same functions as the Planning and Zoning Board does, but just focused on the downtown redevelopment area, doing long-range planning for this area, the application review. They typically see smaller projects, given the size of the area they deal with. They're basically infill projects because the area has been previously developed. And they see a variety of single projects, mixed use, and urban-type projects. So very similar to what the Planning and Zoning Board does, just focused on the downtown area. In January of this year, the responsibilities for staffing the development Downtown Development Committee shifted from the Economic Development Town Center staff to the Planning Division staff. We've continued to coordinate with the Economic Development staff, those people who have worked with the Town Center previously, as we have taken over that responsibility and certainly intend to continue that relationship of having the Economic Development input as we work with the Downtown Development Committee. Our proposal at this point is that we consider elimination of the Downtown Development Committee as a separate board and have all the planning and zoning functions go through the Planning and Zoning Board, that board would assume all those responsibilities. We believe that the experience that the Planning and Zoning staff and Planning and Zoning Board have gained over the last few years, as we've seen more projects developing throughout the city that are similar to what happens in the Town Center area, give us that perspective and ability to handle those types of projects. We believe that there's a value in having the entire city reviewed by one body who's able to look at how the whole city is being planned to make sure the downtown area is getting its proper focus in connection with other areas as they develop and make sure other areas are being developed in perspective of what's happening in the downtown area. So we think the benefits of making this change would be better utilization of our staff resources. With the reductions that we've had, it is difficult for us to manage quite so many boards, and we think we can do each board more efficiently if we have that reduction. And we think with the council's strategic development initiatives and the focus there on the downtown that we will be able to do that in a better way by having, again, that focus from one board that's looking at the whole city as well as downtown. And we'll be able to continue that coordination with the Planning Division, Economic Development Office, Building Safety, Fire, and those other key elements that are responsible for downtown and the unique things that occur in this area. So as Christine mentioned, we met yesterday with the Developers Advisory Forum and received a few comments from them. This summarizes some of those comments. There was concern that we need to make sure that we continue to recognize that the downtown area is unique and important to Mesa and that we continue to have a focus on those unique aspects, that we do need to provide a higher level of service to the downtown area because of that combination of historic preservation, the economic development aspects, the center of our community and identity for our community that's here, and we believe we can do that. I suggest that we consider as we look at P&Z board and P&Z board members as we move forward and make replacements on that board as terms expire, that we make sure we keep that technical background and bring people into the Planning and Zoning Board who have that understanding of the downtown issues to help round out the membership on that board, and then possibly consider a subcommittee of the Planning and Zoning Board that could focus on downtown issues. I think that was the last of those. So that's the discussion about the combination of the Downtown Development Committee and the P&Z Board. So we'd stop here and see if you have any questions for us or directions on how we would proceed.
Councilmember Cavanaugh.
Thank you. I'm going to be the contrarian this morning. As the staff knows, I don't support this proposal. I have serious reservations about this proposal because it's diminishing the citizen participation in the process. We've had a Downtown Development Committee for almost 20 years. And it has done an outstanding job of fostering a one-stop shop for developers in downtown, which is why you heard the comments at the Development Advisory Forum that you need a greater attention to downtown. The Downtown Development Committee has served as in an advocacy role, which planning and zoning historically has not. It has undertaken an economic development focus, which as we know as a council over the last year, we have intensified our efforts to bring to bear economic focus in our development efforts, and that is critically important as well. The Downtown Development Committee also has understood the historic character of the downtown and were some of the leading advocates for us to reinforce the idea that housing downtown is important and help lead the charge to help create the historic designation in our downtown neighborhoods. I think that hopefully most of you will agree that every city has a challenge in maintaining its downtown and supporting development there. And the tool that we have used with the Downtown Development Committee has enabled us to have a broad cross-section of residents over the years to assist us and to assist developers in the projects. Quite frankly, I don't think we would have had the Downtown Streetscape program that we did. The Mesa Arts Center may not have been located downtown, may have been located out east. There are a number of redevelopment projects that where the Downtown Development Committee members really were key individuals or as a group in moving these projects forward. The Downtown Development Committee was the initial driving force to have the downtown concept plan that we are looking at now. The version one came from that group. And I think that the members have served well. I certainly understand the staff challenges. There's no question about that. And there's always been, as long as I've been on City Council, there has been a debate among staff saying, why do we have a Downtown Development Committee and staff devoted to downtown resources? We should treat the whole city the entire way. That's a that's just a philosophical divide among folks. But I think that the DDC and its members have served the city very well throughout the years. And in again, in hearing the comments from the advisory forum, it makes the case for maintaining the DDC because of having the special focus and attention on downtown projects. So I would hope we, if we move forward with this, we would move forward very carefully and cautiously, because I look at what we do in the development process as making sure that we have the broadest possible citizen participation to help us arrive at decisions, to help the development community, to encourage them to develop in the downtown. So that's why I've got reservations about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember. Any other questions? Councilmember Finter.
I appreciate Mr. Kavanaugh's comments, and he speaks to a culture in the DDC and also many of the staff the city has that used to be a focus on the downtown. I've been supportive of this presentation because I think we need to probably change the culture at the P&Z level. I've seen us do a lot of efforts to streamlining, combining. I don't think it's unattainable to be able to get to the same place that DDC has been and still achieve some operation efficiencies, streamlined processes. I think overall all the citizens win when you have that. So I think there's a way to somehow develop, grow, try and get to many of the positive things the DDC has done and the staff at a P&Z level. You know, it's not going to be easy, but definitely a having served years on that and celebrated what I saw with some of the positive approaches at the DDC, I think those can be achieved also at the P&Z level. And so that's why I'm kind of going with what I think is a positive approach.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
After Councilmember Kavanaugh's comments, he has the 20 years experience that I don't quite have with the downtown area, made me think that with the light rail coming through and all the different unique things that are going to be happening and developing, that I agree with Councilmember Kavanaugh that I don't necessarily want to move that quickly on removing DDC, just because there are going to be so many more. I mean, that will be the new hub of development. And at this time, I guess since they've done such a good job in the past, that I would be hesitant to move forward in removing them also.
Councilmember Richens.
Since there's only five of us, I guess there's enough time for speech making for all of us. Alex and I served together on a downtown development, the redevelopment, ad hoc redevelopment advisory committee. And for a year, we studied downtown issues. And one of the conclusions I came to during that year of service was this. Elimination of the Downtown Development Committee and combining of the P and, you know, rolling that into planning and zoning. One of the things I think I'm most sensitive about is to making sure that we have an adequate level of design review function on the P&Z board. because I served 3 years on the Design Review Board, too, and saw what an important role that board played in increasing the architectural quality of the buildings of our city. And they were invaluable. Sometimes we got over the top and a little bit maybe too pushy, and I think that's a fair comment. But for the most part, I think the hearts were in the right place to bring architecture to our city that was of high quality. And so for any proposal that comes through, I would like to make sure that we have expertise on the Planning and Zoning Board that can review design. One of the tensions that always existed between the Planning and Zoning Board and the Design Review Board was site planning. Design Review Board members looked at site planning as a design issue, and that it was a very important aspect of making buildings fit together and you know, the context of what was next door work with what was happening at that specific project. And then the Planning and Zoning Board looked at as purely as part of this the planning function. And by combining these boards, we eliminate that tension, I think, finally, once and for all, which is good. But again, we need to have some expertise on the Planning and Zoning Board. So I think I would support this moving forward if we could keep design expertise on the Planning and Zoning Board. I know that there are some specific slots that need to be filled in some way. On the Design Review Board had specific slots. I'd like to see something like that on P&Z, because I just worry that if we get too technical and just site planning, we lose sight of the whole context. And I'd like to see P&Z take a look at design as part of the context of everything that happens in the city. And I know that there's provisions for DRB to morph into Architecture Review Committee, and that's kind of an appeals function now if staff but watching the tension between staff and developers, sometimes staff, I think, liked having a design review board in order to independently review or corroborate or not design changes. So I think I support this going forward. I know I support this going forward. But would like to see some specific design function embedded in the Planning and Zoning Board. Thanks.
Thank you. As it relates to Downtown Development Committee, I have to say that I agree with the things that Councilmember Kavanaugh said as far as citizen input in that. I look at this as two separate issues, though. One involves the involvement of the citizenry and the unique nature of downtown, which I completely agree with. The other is more of a procedural issue. And I also have personal experience as a developer who tried to develop downtown and was first made aware of the very unique nature in that we have a completely separate process for doing something downtown than we do in other areas of the city. And it was extremely frustrating for me to walk in and have a completely different discussion from people who were disconnected to the process. I don't think people realize that the planning and zoning staff really had no involvement whatsoever in downtown zoning issues. We have spent a lot of time developing a philosophy, developing a new approach to land use decisions and to planning decisions, of which downtown is an integral part, because the same philosophy that applies at Mesa Proving Grounds will apply, hopefully, along the light rail route, in the Fiesta Mall district, and certainly in the downtown district. The problem we have with our current setup procedurally is that the downtown process is completely separate from that and does not share in that vision or that process. I experienced this as a developer coming in and trying to do something downtown, and it was extremely frustrating for me because there was the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, and I think that served as actually an obstacle. I agree that downtown is unique, just as the Gateway area is unique, just as the Fiesta District is unique. Each of them have their own specific deals, which is one reason why long term I'd love to see more of a village system put together, but we're not there yet. Even in that system, we have to have, where we get unique input, we have to have a system that is consistent and that implements a citywide overall vision for how we're going to approach land uses, how we're going to create a regulatory environment that incentivizes
development by creating, by lessening the obstacles, raising the standards. I agree with Councilmember Richens, and I don't think those are mutually exclusive. I think we can do both of those. We can raise standards, but then also create a process that makes it easier. That comes back to a unified philosophy, which I don't believe we can achieve with a separate procedural. I like some of your ideas about the subcommittees. I like the idea of having some sort of advisory function for those who look at the unique nature of downtown. On a procedural basis, though, I think that in order to implement a what I believe is a citywide philosophy and new approach to land use decisions, I think that procedurally we need to bring the planning and zoning staff into the process, overseeing the process of both the downtown and other areas in the city, and the Planning and Zoning Committee having the final decision. As far as the discussion, we're going to get into this more when we get to design review, the technical, but just a little thing. I agree with the comments, but then again, I think we have to look at the nature, and maybe that's part of the problem with what we're dealing with. I don't see citizens' boards as being technical boards. I see citizens' boards as establishing helping this council to establish policy, or either implementing policy or overseeing a vision and overseeing maybe the general policy of the city. Now, maybe that's not completely attainable without some sort of technical knowledge, but I think that most citizens can see on a reasonableness basis when something shows up on their desk that just doesn't pass the smell test. And so as we go forward, I would agree that we need those standards. I'm hoping that we come up with something that does not throw those standards to the side, but has a different way of achieving those that actually is much more beneficial to the development community, because it enables them to get through technical issues in a much more efficient manner. And then what the citizens' boards are dealing with is, does this pass the smell test? Does this meet our standards? So I'm going to be supporting this separation, but I'd like to also look at some of the things that you're talking about as far as maintaining that unique input for downtown. Whether we do it through subcommittee or whether we do it through some other kind of advisory committee, I would like to explore that.
Can you repeat that? You said you support the separation. You mean this combination?
The consolidation. Okay. I'm sorry.
I apologize.
The consolidation. The elimination of the formal downtown development committee procedure as it currently exists, not only in this, but in code also. We're going to have to make some ordinance changes because there is an ordinance that certain things must go through downtown development and be approved by that. It has the same force as planning and zoning in most land use situations. So I would support that change. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
This is a comment to the staff. Have you discussed this issue with either current or past downtown development committee members? I know you discussed your proposals with the development community, but have you made any effort to discuss this with our citizen members?
We actually sent the proposal that council received to all of the board members. To my knowledge, I haven't received any specific comment back. You've got an email from Linda Flick, mm-hmm. who does serve on the DDC, but we were wanting to make sure that we sort of manage the timing properly.
Sure.
As far as talking to council versus talking to the board. So we haven't had official discussions at the board meetings on these proposals at this time.
Can you tell me when you sent that out? Last week?
Sure, absolutely. When I sent it out. We sent it out actually just a couple of days after we sent it to council, I think. It was last Tuesday.
Thank you.
And Councilman Garrett, I have spoken with several members of the Downtown Development Committee when this thing first surfaced several months ago. Okay. I got some inquiries from several members. And have had informal discussions with them, talking about the philosophy that we're trying to accomplish with this, the philosophical changes as far as the procedural issues. So I've had several discussions with them, and they've raised some of the concerns you have, and on the other hand, support in many ways. The general feedback I've gotten is that they support the procedural changes, but would love to still have a voice. So I think there's a way we can maybe balance that.
Okay.
Let's go on to the next issue.
Okay.
The next one is the design review board. Again, just quickly, the current setup is we have a 7-member design review board. They meet monthly and review projects that are over 20,000 square feet in size that are along an arterial road. They review city projects. Public participation consists of a policy that we notify property owners within 300 feet. current procedure on an application. It comes in, staff gives it some initial review, puts it on a work session for a DRB meeting. DRB then looks at that application, just kind of standing around the table with the applicant, provides them some feedback. Applicant then uses that input, makes any modifications they deem appropriate, submit that back, and then at the following meeting it shows up typically on the Design Review Board's agenda for their consideration. Most times it's on their in a consent situation. Then they also review appeal of staff decisions on other cases, admin cases or smaller cases that we had to review. The proposal is that we modify this to what we're calling an architectural review committee, just to make sure it's distinction that this is different. We're proposing five members, a minimum of three of which would be design professionals, and this committee would serve as an appeals board instead of the primary review board. Applications would come in, staff would provide that review that we typically do, make a decision on the application, then if the applicant's not pleased with that decision, they could appeal that decision onto the review committee. Exception to that would be city projects. We think that just given the different city staff departments working on projects, it'll just be better if those always go to the committee for their review and decision. We also propose that this group meet at least quarterly if they're not having any other meetings. At that time, staff could show them projects that we have reviewed and approved and get any feedback from them to make sure that we are staying consistent with what they believe to be the community's accepted standards and moving things in the right direction. So again, the process under the new procedure would be that would be the same type of applications that currently go to the Design Review Board would still be formal applications that staff would review. Because of the basic review steps that are still involved, the sending requests out for different departments and divisions to look at and provide feedback, then giving that to the applicant, they give us their responses. That's still going to take, we believe, someplace around a month and a half to 2 months to process the typical case. And so there won't be a whole lot of time savings, but there can be on projects that are well designed and ready to move forward.
Well, Mr. Wesley, just one quick. It may be the same time process, but would this provide more flexibility as far as whether you can run a case concurrently or not, or does it change that much at all?
As far as, Mayor, as far as a case running concurrently with a P&Z board application?
Or any type of process, because a lot of these are not P&Z driven because site plan's already been approved. This is purely almost a building permit. Whatever situation it is, if there's already a zoning case approved, then there wouldn't be a concurrent process. But could you run those things concurrently?
Yes, Mayor, we could. Currently, we try to run things as concurrently as we can anyway, but we would continue to do that. And if there are any opportunities to do even more of that, we would certainly.
Getting back to, for example, when we talked about the differences between a site plan and a design review, whereas Councilman Richens, who talked about the differences in looking at that, in essence, this brings them all together. And if we have a site plan, it becomes both a design issue and a planning issue or land use issue. I mean, it seems to me like it could, since they're all in the same house now,
correct,
it could create the ability to combine those two processes.
Yes, Mayor, it can, and we certainly encourage that. Sometimes the applicants aren't ready to take that step and do that detailed design work until they get more of those land use approvals, but anytime they are, we sure encourage and try to combine them into one review.
And that's at their option. If they want to be ready and they want to expedite the process, then they get their architectural work done at the same time they get their
site design
done, and they could create the concurrent.
Absolutely.
Is it your opinion that projects that do that are one are speculative and the other is a real project that's typically moving forward?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, if I understand your question, typically if you've got a tenant that's ready to go, that's when we'll see the combined applications. They're ready to take their architecture forward at the same time as their site plan. But the ones that are a little bit more speculative, that they're just trying to get their entitlements so that they can go out there and attract some tenants, those are less likely to have the actual architectural design at that time because they need the tenant to help finalize those.
Okay, thanks.
Councilman Kavanaugh, do you have a question now?
Just a couple more points here in terms of where we're at. We still intend to send notice as we do today. When the application first comes in, we'll go ahead and send out that notice to let property owners know we've got the case and they have until a certain date to provide us a response. We think this will, again, better utilize our staff resources that we have, so we're not having to prepare those extra agendas and minutes and so forth. We can focus on actually doing the design review. And in those cases where we do have the high-quality projects that have all their things together, we can move them through a little faster by not having to wait for that final board meeting. If they're good, we can go ahead and sign it off instead of waiting for the board action. One of the questions that staff had as we went to the board and would have to the forum and we would have for the council is on appeal. Currently, something that goes to the design review board has an appeal procedure where anybody can appeal that decision of the board on the council. How would we want to handle that on the staff process? Right now, we're focused on the idea that the applicant can appeal that staff decision. Do we want to broaden that and still allow citizens to appeal staff decisions on design review cases? And then what would the time frame be for that appeal to happen? As we discussed this with the forum yesterday, they had some concerns that there could be some political pressures applied to staff to because of any reason to hurry up and get a project built, and don't be quite so hold the line so hard on the aesthetics just to get it approved and out the door. There was support for vesting the authority of the staff and eliminating the board, that some thought that was a good idea and a good way to go. There was some concern that we wouldn't be able to save significantly on the timeline, and again, we will try to do that where we can, but in our opinion, we have reduced the timeline pretty significantly already from what it has been, and 2 months is a pretty quick time frame already, but where we can, we will try to reduce that. There was a desire amongst the people we talked with yesterday at the forum, and again, we had about a dozen people at the forum. They were concerned about continuing public participation in that process. They thought the real focus needed to be through the P&Z and land use decision. Once you're working on the actual building design and that architectural, that the public doesn't maybe understand that difference, and they come, they try to affect land use decisions through that architectural design. And at that point, there maybe isn't as much need for that public participation, so they were concerned about that. As Councilmember Richens has talked about, there was some discussion there about a greater effort to integrate the design functions into the P&Z function. Maybe the P&Z board could become the DR board for that technical expertise on there, requiring those design aspects to be looked at in conjunction with the land use decisions. And again, that allows the staff to focus on all the things at one time. There was some concern that maybe there should be some level of projects that still automatically go to the board because there are certain size, there are a certain location, there are certain sensitivities to the area. We couldn't get too definitive about what those might be, but that there's some things that are maybe just so important that they should always go to the board to make sure we're getting that greater public input and citizen involvement in what's going on. And so if there's interest in that, we need to try to define what those things are. We also discussed a little bit the idea of maybe there's a possibility of looking at some of the different characters areas of the city, Dobson Ranch versus downtown versus Las Cendas or whatever, and define a little bit more of our design standards in terms of what's appropriate in those areas. And that could give staff then that extra input to reviewing designs in a particular area and applicants also, to see that projects are being consistent with the design standard that's been set for that area and helps move out that process. And I think that's the last of those slides. One thing I think I skipped over in the process before is one of the ideas also we have is that we could have on contract an architect to be available to assist staff. We no longer this time have a registered architect that's part of the planning division staff. So if we are having some detailed discussions with an applicant about the architecture of their building, and we feel like we need that extra expertise, we could pull in that contract architect to help us work with the applicant and discuss architect some of those design issues. So questions?
Okay, Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I know I'm the oldest person in the city council, but this morning I feel like Methuselah in terms of institutional memory issues. And again, I do not support this proposal. Design review came from the community. It didn't come from staff. It didn't come from city council. It came from neighborhood leaders in the late 80s and early 90s. It particularly came from my part of the city. And I was part of that process. And we were concerned that our staff obviously is focused on land use issues, not design issues. And the staff did not have capacity, or it did not do, quite frankly, much in the way of design input on projects. And there was political pressure, and there is always political pressure on planning and zoning cases. And the community felt it was important to have a citizen-driven process, whether it's citizen participation and advice to developers, to staff, to the council on these issues. And I think the Design Review Board members have done an outstanding job in the years that they have worked. And one need only look at the difference between West Mesa and East Mesa to see the distinction in terms of the work that has been done. Design can have a significant impact on the quality of life in neighborhoods and surrounding businesses. And I know developers don't like public participation on design issues after the land use has been established, but the residents of our community feel that it is important and there should be a forum for that. Unfortunately, again, I think the proposal that we're looking at is, again, a diminution of citizen participation in the process. And I don't think that should be a philosophy of a council, and particularly, again, for a group that has done well. There are always going to be disagreements over some of design issues. There's going to be different personalities who serve on design review boards, as they serve on all our advisory boards throughout the years, that will draw the ire of people in the development community or whoever the regulated community is. There'll be advisory board members or council members they don't like. But I think in looking at the work that has been done, I think it's been positive for the city. I think the process has worked well in that we've achieved better results in terms of projects that are more sustainable, that are more integrated into their surroundings. And I think, again, all we need to do is look at the contrast in design standards between West and East Mesa, or the new big projects such as Riverview. Again, design review played a key role in the development of that project. So again, if we move forward on this, I would hope that we would move very cautiously and again seek to preserve as much citizen participation as possible, because the system works well. It's not broken. There's not a need to fix it. I understand the staff concern. This is staff driven. This is not community driven. But I understand where you're coming from, but I think the needs of the community have been well served by the process that we have. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember Higgins.
Councilmember Kavanaugh stole all my points. Thank you very much. That couple of that was the same. Again, it seems to be staff driven. The process has worked. We don't have like some big issue where we're not producing excellent projects in the city, and I think that we should not change anything that seems to be working so well for so long and has made such a big difference in the quality of projects. And I never felt comfortable reviewing this, of removing the design review board, although the meetings I've gone to, that's very interesting, and they pick out things that I would never even think of. But that's what they do, and they do that very well. And since they are volunteer board and there are registered architects on there, I'm thinking, why would we not want to utilize our expertise in the community for free, as opposed to, you know, hiring a registered architect to review something we had a concern with, when we have such amazing, fine architects in the city of Mesa that have volunteered their time on these boards. So I agree with not really moving ahead with the removal of the design review board at this time.
Councilmember Richens?
I don't know. I Councilmember Kavanaugh, I wasn't sure whether to bristle or to be mad about his characterization of West and East. I've never been a huge fan of red tile roofs and stucco anyway, which is what I largely find in East Mesa. But I think design hasn't been driven by the design review board. It's been driven by our design standards within our code. And as a policymaking body, if we want better design, we need to raise our design standards. When you look through the code, we've designed homogeny into our standards. And the more we raise the bar in our design standards, DRB serves an important function. It does. Having served on it, I enjoyed my service there and found it valuable. And
But I think really a lot of this is driven by design standards and not by just a board of citizens. And that's the thing that we need to focus on, raising our design standards. Then we will continue, whether a DRB exists or not, we will continue to get high-quality projects.
Councilman Finter.
Thanks, Mayor. I'm a little conflicted on this, as you're hearing people share. I want it all. I want the streamlined process. I want the ability of the property owner to be incentivized. So to build a quality project with quality materials, they're able to get through the system faster. They're able to get all the positives that come from that. I do think it's important that we do have a higher quality of projects, but I don't want it to be on a penalty basis. I'd love to see it on an incentive basis. So can you find a way to get a streamlined concurrent process that benefits the developer, get all the quality that we want to achieve, and be able to satisfy it all? And I don't know if this is going to be how we get to there, so I'm keeping an open mind a bit. Thanks, Mayor.
I find this discussion interesting. First of all, I'd like to dispel one notion. This idea was not staff-driven. This idea was driven by the community, and I will take partial ownership because I raised this idea not long after taking office. And in an interesting way, I raised the ideas not to eliminate design standards, but to elevate them. I agree with what Councilmember Richens said. I think that one of our problems is that we use the design review board and accept that as somehow being the method in which we impose design standards. And it certainly is an important tool in that. But I think that our problem is not with how a board or even staff implements those standards. It's what are the standards. And I think we need to raise our standards. The one thing I am somewhat concerned with is when we say contract architect. I'm very much in favor of involving contract architects at the technical and detailed review. I think it not having that at the informal level creates some absurdities in a citizen board where you have a citizen board arguing over what type of window coverings they put in a building, and I've been involved with that, or whether rain gutters can go on a building or not, and even to the extent that you have a development having to remove a rain gutter because it wasn't on a detailed drawing, you know, things like that, which I think can be avoided if we have professionals involved at an earlier stage. I also find, maybe I'm the only one that's catching the interesting nature of our discussions today. We spent a lot of time debating whether an inspector can walk into a slum, a blight, a rundown property that barely meets health and standard, but we have no problem with a citizens group telling a private property owner what color they can paint their building. I see a huge disconnect there. I have no problem raising huge standards for design because I think one of the mistakes we've made in Mesa is that in a laissez-faire atmosphere, we allow junk to be built. And to me, it's not a private property issue as much as it is a community issue, because we as a community are paying the price for this laissez-faire attitude of 3 and 4 decades ago. We now have properties and buildings that were built to no standards that are now our slum and blight that I think could have been avoided had we had standards at that time. And believe me, these slum and blighted areas create a huge cost, not only a psychological cost for our community, but a real cost. If you look at our public safety, if you look at the dollars and cents we spend as a city government, they are significantly higher in areas that have become blighted and dilapidated than they are the areas that have maintained. And design standards play, in my mind, a large role in that, because people will go to the nicer places. Investment goes to places where they think there's quality. So I think we can learn. My objective is not to diminish or eliminate or even lower. I would love to see our standards go up. I'd also, agreeing with Councilmember Finter, love to see our process work not to regulate builders, but to facilitate builders and developers to get to those higher standards. I think all too often we set higher standards and then we place obstacles in the way of people getting there. I think we should raise standards, but we should also create a process that facilitates that.
I believe that if we include this, for example, the contract architect, and I've been involved in many large projects which have incredibly high development standards and design standards, and the process is it's not an easy process. It's a demanding process, but it's a fair process, and you involve professional level, non-staff professional level at an early stage to work through, as Mr. Wesley said, architect to architect, some of those details and some of those the ways that we can accomplish our design standards without getting in, without us as non-technical citizens getting into the details of that. At the end of the day, we know, and a citizens board can look at a project and say it either meets the standards or it doesn't meet the standards without arguing whether it should be a gabled roof or a hip roof. That's what I think is absurd for a citizen board to get into, which it happens, because it doesn't really matter. Gable or hip, does it meet our standards? You know, is it going to fit in with the neighborhood? Is it going to elevate the view and be something besides the constant replication of red tile roofs, which creates a new standard but creates the same boredom that we have when we have no standards? So I am in support of this, but only if the process that we put in place achieves what Councilmember Kavanaugh so rightly talks about, and that is we do need to maintain these standards. I agree that we need to have professional involvement at an early stage, and some that probably doesn't involve staff, to get them out of that political arena and get them into technical areas where you can talk architect to architect. But I believe that streamlining that process, which is important, and in the environment we currently exist, that we live in, I believe that having the design review board as the process is something that is done a wonderful job, but I think it's time to move to a higher level, and I think that higher level would not include the design review board. I think it as the primary place where these decisions are made. So I would be in support of this with some clarifications and some tweaks to make sure that what gets to a citizens board is really standard driven, policy driven, and not technical detail driven, because I don't think that's the best place to sort those out, and you lose sight of the standards when you start arguing over whether it's yellow or whether it's brown. So that's my two bits on that.
Mayor, if I may, the one question in particular that we would like to get some feedback on is on the appeals from the staff. Is appeals just by applicants, or do we want to leave the door open for citizens within a close proximity to also be able to appeal a staff decision on it?
I'll throw that. I understand the desires and needs of neighbors to be involved in land use process. I don't know where the line between legitimate concerns and illegitimate tampering and property rights, I don't know where that line is. I wish I could say that. But I know it exists because I've seen it. I've experienced it. So I don't know. Do you want to leave it open as far as citizens and other ones that they can appeal?
John, how does it work today?
Today, any citizen can appeal a DR decision.
So the question is, do you want to change that?
Since if we do it, first of all, I think that if it develops, let me back up a bit. The way I read your new process, the burden is really on the developer to work with this architect and work within the system and hopefully work with the neighbors to come up with something that works. In my mind, if they can't do that, somebody should have the right to appeal to another board, and if nothing more than as a control function. I think that certainly creates a control mechanism that they always know that if they don't work with staff and with others, that there is recourse by interested parties, and those interested parties could include the neighbors.
We weren't trying to take away anybody's right to appeal or question, and that's why we kept it at one level, we kept it at the staff level, but then any appeal certainly could go to the DRB. So I don't see any reason why we would eliminate any group or individual who could do it today.
Councilmember
in the future.
If there was a way to achieve like a hearing officer or some sort of streamlined appeal process, where you still achieve the time savings but get a legitimate appeal heard, that would be nice. I know we do that at some level on P&Z. But
yeah, we were hoping to use that. Was where we were going to continue to use the DRB.
Well, I think since they are sort of on call, if there is an appeal that comes up, they can streamline that,
yeah, we'll
that
work
issue
with them.
They can schedule meetings as needed.
Right.
It's not like, oh, gee, they're not meeting for 3 months. You have to wait.
Right. No.
That group can be
right.
nimble enough to
right.
where they can, giving proper notification and ability for the neighbors and whoever to come in and voice their concerns, they could schedule their meetings as needed. Yes. Councilman Kavanaugh.
I would hope that we would, if you move forward with this, that we continue to allow any citizen to do an appeal. I don't think, again, we should narrow the scope. But my question is, if we establish the Architectural Review Committee, where do appeals of that committee go to? Does it come to the council?
Yes, sir.
Okay, same as we do
it's
now?
Because
this wasn't in the memo, so I wasn't...
Yeah, sure. Well, we just, I guess, yeah.
And I think my understanding of the process, just, and maybe I'm missing something, is that the involvement in the architecture, and especially if we use this contract architect involved, is more intense than what it is right now. Not that staff isn't doing their job, but I, once again, elevating the level of working together and that you can work out detail professional to professional.
Okay.
And hopefully come up with something that solves the problem before it reaches that level.
Right.
And that in and of itself should streamline it, because you're not set into how the projects fall in the queue, but that you have someone who's assigned to work specifically architect, however it is, to solve these problems before it rises to that level. And I'm hoping that creates a kind of streamlined process and is fair to both sides.
That's certainly the expectation.
Okay. Thank you.
We have one more?
Yes.
Well, Mayor, may I suggest that we bring this back at another time?
Yeah, let's do that.
You're running out, okay. We're running
and
out.
And I apologize to Mr. Ray on the audit. We, Mr. Brady and I have a meeting we have to be to in downtown Phoenix in an hour, so we need to wrap it up. So let's bring back this last part on the next thing, if we can.
All right.
And we'll bring back the audit report also.
Okay,
Gary.
Thank
and
you.
Mayor,
Ms.
Higgins.
Would it be possible to put a word out for any of the people that are on all those committees if they had anything to say today?
Now that's on the...
Yeah.
You understand this process is such... This was the introduction of the
okay.
idea.
Okay.
Now, anyone who has a vested interest or would like to comment can certainly...
It'll be going back through the
It's going to be coming back forward because these changes require formal action.
Now we will put the ordinances together, go through...
Yeah.
PNC
so
and
this is the beginning of the process, right. Not the end of the process,
right.
and it'll take several
it'll
weeks,
be back in council,
months,
probably after the summer break,
months to get
definitely.
This because we do have ordinances involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much. Okay, I would skip number four, but we want to talk real quickly about some important things that have happened last night. Well, let's start with Mr. Kavanaugh first.
I want to talk about an event that happened yesterday at Beverly Park. Councilmember Richens got to brag last week about Park of the Canals, but we had over 625 volunteers from all over the country who came to create the playground and park at this site that the city bought more than 6 years ago. And it's a wonderful opportunity that they took from Home Depot and Kaboom and so many volunteers and neighborhood residents. And our new park will open this Saturday at 1 o'clock. And it was a remarkable testimony to the power of volunteerism in the community. And I especially want to thank the West Mesa Community Development Corporation and Joanne McNamara for seeking out the application for the grant. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Richens.
I was just going to add on just real quick. After the Toby Keith event, which I'm presuming you're going to talk about, I dropped by Beverly Park to see it, and there were some little kids there just staring over the orange fencing, safety fencing, keeping away, just smiling, huge, waiting for that cement to dry. So it's a neat thing.
Nah, both of those were really cool. And a great compliment to this community that we have that kind of involvement in two wonderful projects. And those are just continuation, whether it's top to bottom or the things that are done literally on a weekly basis by a variety of groups, citizen groups in this community. It's great.
Yeah, what West Mesa may lack in architectural quality, we make up for it.
Heart, right.
Heart and volunteers.
And I guess we'll talk about last night, the official grand opening of Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill in Riverview, a very successful Mr. Keith himself was there. And, it's just anything that's new and fun and exciting in the city, I think, is worthwhile. And this is certainly a worthwhile venture. We appreciate the investment in our community, appreciate those who came together to put on that event, and look forward to this as being another exciting milestone that builds or provides a foundation for even better things to happen. So thank you for all those involved. And thank you to the Capri Restaurant Group and Toby Keith for their investment. That's awesome.
Always love investment in our community. That's a big investment. Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
One quickie. I just have to wish my husband a happy 50th birthday today.
No.
Yay.
Happy birthday, Jack. Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor and Council. The next scheduled study session is June 11th, but it appears we're going to have some council members absent, so we're going to go ahead and cancel the June 11th study session. We will have a study session, though, on the 18th, and then on the 22nd, we will probably need to have quite a few items prior to the council meeting in a study session to make up for the 11th. So we'll give you a break on the 11th, but we'll make up for it on the 22nd. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins,
since it's so much later, I'll just throw this. I want to thank Ladder 201 A Shift, Joe Quinteraneris, John Gomez, Chris Hewitt, and Kevin Malcolm, who responded to a 911 call at my parents' house and successfully got my father to the hospital where he's stable and doing well. So I appreciate our great Mesa Fire Department and their amazing service to our city. Thank you.
Thanks. Glad to hear things are going well. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from public?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay, there being no requests, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn, a second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.